All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of A Place in the Conversation. My name is Dan Neiswanger. I'm the spiritual formation catalyst at A Place in the Conversation. We're glad to have you join us today. I'm joined by my good friend and partner, Nick Everhart. So, Nick, what did you have for breakfast today?
Well, thank you for asking, Dave. we were talking about Dave Letterman. For breakfast, I had, I can't remember.
It's been so long ago.
Yeah, I had a waffle with peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, that's pretty good. That actually sounds pretty good. You know, that's my go-to thing, minus the peanut butter and jelly, down at the Drip Cafe down in Hoquesson. You know, it's one waffle, a side of small bacon, and a black coffee.
Nice.
And if you haven't been to the Drip Cafe down in Hoquesson, you need to get there. It's an amazing place. It's where I do a lot of my writing and a lot of editing for the books that I have spent some time with. So, yeah, it's a wonderful place. And Nick and I have kind of made it one of the places that we go to grab a coffee together.
Yeah, a great place.
Yeah. Well, today we are making a place in the conversation for a good friend and used to be co-worker of mine, Monica Fragel. Monica is the administrative assistant at First Baptist Church of Kennett Square, and I had the privilege of hiring her for that position a number of years ago, and so we worked together for probably 6 years, and it was great to be able to work together. But we're not going to talk about the church. We're not going to talk about the joys of working together and all that kind of stuff. We're really here to talk about like disruptions in life, because just a while back, how long ago has it been, Monica?
10 months.
10 months ago. Okay, so about 10 months ago, Monica and her family at Barry, and they had a significant disruption in their life, and we just want to spend a little bit of time talking about that disruption and talking about how you navigate a season of disruption in your life, how you do it well, and some of the lessons learned, some of the things that you might do again, and some of the things that you might do differently. So Monica, why don't you introduce you and your family first, and then we'll talk about that season of disruption.
Okay. As Dan said, I'm Monica. My husband is Barry Fragel, and for years he worked at the Fragel Brothers Barber Shop right on Union Street in Kennett. And we have two daughters, Mia, who's 17, and Emily, who's 14.
Okay. And so talk about the disruption.
The disruption first started back in April of last year. My husband, who's 52 now, had a series of strokes. And while he was in the hospital, they did imaging. And as part of that imaging, they discovered that his spinal canal is more narrow than most people's, and that he had two discs in his neck that were pressing on the spinal canal or on the spinal cord. And the doctor recommended surgery. And said, you know, you can, it wasn't, an imminent thing, but that, you know, he needed surgery. And so we spent most of the summer going to visit different doctors. And the one thing they all said was with that kind of, situation going on in his neck, something as simple as turning your head could force the discs farther into the spinal cord and cause paralysis. So we had finally found a doctor that we liked, and we had spent a couple weeks trying to arrange surgery with that office. And so our youngest daughter, Emily, has a best friend named Isabel. And over the last year, we got very close with her parents. We would go camping with them, and they were down at the beach with Emily in Bethany, I believe. Yeah. And so they invited us down. And I remember Barry went down on Saturday, August 13th, right after work. And it was nice for him because he worked a lot of hours at the barber shop, and I know he was looking forward to some relaxation. I wasn't going to come down until the next day, the 14th, because I was bringing my daughter and her new boyfriend for the day. So Saturday, Barry goes down there and he has a great time. Sunday, I get down there and we went out to get donuts for everybody. Barry and Matt, who is Isabel's father, you know, they were talking about, let's do a crab feast for dinner. So they went out to the store. Meanwhile, Isabel's mom, Karen, and I, and Emily and Isabel walked down to the beach and got set up. And then, maybe a little while after, Barry and Matt came down. And Barry was in the water for, it was maybe 10 minutes after he got down that the accident happened. And he and Matt were boogie boarding, and a wave came and kind of crashed over on Barry and snapped his neck forward and broke his neck and caused a life-changing spinal cord injury. One of the God moments during all of this that we didn't find out about until later was our youngest, Emily, was right next to him. And she was actually the one who lifted his head up out of the water because he was floating face down and conscious the whole time. But she lifted his head out of the water until the lifeguards came. She told me later she had a gut feeling that something bad was going to happen. And so she made it a point to stick with him. And as a result, she saved his life. It's funny, these moments, she had called me over. I was sitting with Karen and reading like I normally do on the beach. She called me over and I didn't think anything of it. And I didn't walk very far and I saw a group of people standing over someone. I didn't see Barry's face, but I knew it was him and he was on the sand. And I went over and I remember him saying, I can't move. He was paralyzed from the neck down. And while the lifeguards worked to get an ambulance and eventually a helicopter to take him to Christiana, we had some very quick conversations. Like, all right, I know we have a will, but what do you want me to do if, let's say, you're in surgery and something happens? What are your wishes? And I was glad we had that conversation then, but it's weird how it, in times of, you don't think about this stuff until you're faced with it. And then suddenly it's right there in your face.
So you had that conversation on the beach.
Yep. With, I don't know, maybe 7 lifeguards around us, getting him ready, waiting for this 4-wheeler that they were going to put the stretcher on. And I remember so many details about that day. He was wearing blue swim trunks. And when they got him out of the water, his arms were kind of bent behind his head, and that's the way they pulled him out. And I believe it was so, you know, it would protect his neck even more. So when he said he couldn't move, I went into shock. Now our oldest daughter, Mia, and her boyfriend weren't on the beach. They were walking down the beach farther. So I called her, and I remember everybody standing there, and I know I went into autopilot mode. I'm telling them, you know, Barry has this condition and this condition, and this is what the doctor saw when he had the strokes. And, oh, by the way, he had strokes. And, oh, by the way, he's on blood thinners. And they're trying to get me to calm down, and I'm I'm approaching hysterical mode, but calm hysterical, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't gonna fall apart, but I was right there. And then they got an ambulance, they loaded him up and took him into the town of Bethany, where a state police helicopter had landed. And this whole time, her friends, Karen and Matt, were absolutely wonderful. They said, don't even worry about the girls. They'll be fine. Emily was staying down with them for the week. And I remember going to the helicopter and talking to the flight medic and asking, can I fly along? And they said, no, you can't. But we're taking him to Christiana. And once he took off, they drove me back to the beach. Well, I could not find where I parked my car. Little details like that just fly out of your head. And I remember walking on the boardwalk, and first person I called was Pastor Dan. Because I needed that reassurance. I needed that spiritual connection. I eventually found my car. And Karen and Matt said, look, we're going to keep Mia for the week. We don't want you to worry about anything. And then I set off on the 2-hour drive to Christiana. There was a lot of beach traffic.
By yourself.
By myself. Which was okay, because I didn't have to worry about putting on an act for anybody. The ER had called. They told me they needed to do surgery. I was giving them details. And then I started calling his family and my family. I called his brother, who he's partners with in the barbershop. I called his twin sister. I called my mom and my brother, and was telling them, you know, this is what happened. We don't know anything else. I'm headed to Christiana. I'll keep you updated. And by the time I got there, they were prepping him for surgery. The neurosurgeon had to do the surgery that we were hoping to have done, but they had to do it to stabilize Barry's neck, because it was life threatening.
Yeah.
Found out later when he came into the hospital, he was in respiratory failure because he had swallowed seawater, before Emily had lifted his head. And so they did the first surgery, and 2 days later they did a second surgery to relieve the swelling. He spent about he did spend 3 weeks in the intensive care unit at Christiana. And I basically lived down there during visiting hours. And one of the things I will always remember is not just our families coming together, but First Baptist supported me. George Fresalone, one of the elders, came down and sat with me in the waiting room. Vicki Knotts, who is with Church of the Advent, where I go, she came down and sat with me. My brother on that day started a GoFundMe for Barry because we didn't know what was going to happen other than he was totally paralyzed. By the end of the first day, there was $35,000 in it. The community, the biggest amount of support we've gotten, it's just very touching how much the community rallied around Barry. Not just our family and friends and neighbors, but, you know, his customers, people we didn't even know. They all rallied around. I didn't have to worry about food because Mia's Girl Scout leader set up a meal train, which, you know, again, when you're spending weeks driving back and forth to the hospital, the last thing you're thinking about is, how am I going to feed my kids? And that took one worry away. Knowing that they were safe with our friends down at the beach took another worry away. And while we were at Christiana, we learned that he was what's called a C4 incomplete quadriplegic. So C4 being the last area where he has full, where it works fully. Christopher Reeves, for example, was a complete quadriplegic. So there was no sensation or movement from the point of injury down. Barry had some sensation and movement. And as the weeks went on, we found he was able to lift his arms. After the surgery and after he got the, he was on a ventilator for a while, backing up, and he did end up with pneumonia. And after he got off the ventilator and got out of the surgical collar, he was able to move his neck fine, even lift it up. He could move his shoulders. But he still had nothing from basically mid-chest on down. And, excuse me, another God moment was the neurosurgeon who performed the two surgeries was amazing. And we never would have met him if not for this horrible accident. And he did an amazing job on Barry. It's horrible that it was under those circumstances, but it was also a relief knowing that this man worked his magic on Barry and was able to stabilize his neck and save his life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he spent 3 weeks in the ICU, and then after that, he went to McGee Rehab in Philadelphia from September 6th, which was like 3 days before his 52nd birthday, to October 28th. And McGee specializes in spinal cord injuries. Another God moment that happened was while he was there, a good friend of his and a customer was also there, a man by the name of Anthony Caputo Smith, who was a professional boxer. And Anthony had a very bad stroke. Coincidentally, he was on the floor above, I believe he was on the floor above where Barry was. So he would come down and visit Barry. And again, little things like that just made such a big difference. Religion also became a big factor. There was my husband's Catholic, and there was a Catholic priest in Philadelphia from a church down the way who would come in and pray with him. And I wouldn't say we were particularly religious before this, but it definitely sparked our spirituality. Yeah. Yeah. And after McGee, he went to Poughkeepsie Home while we work on getting our house modified and finding care for him because he needs 24-hour care.
Yeah. Yeah. So Monica, that you know, when we talk about life disruptions, right, that qualifies as a, you know, as a significant life disruption and yeah. a significant life change. That is absolutely for sure. What are some of the things that you've learned as you've walked through that? What are some of the things that have surprised you about the way that people have responded, and you know, in good ways and in ways that you wouldn't have expected that mm-hmm. were maybe less than helpful, you know, maybe good intentioned, but still like less than helpful.
Yeah.
As you've traveled the last 10 months.
One of the ways I've been surprised, Barry had a customer named Richie Forte. And we only saw him socially, I think, but ever since Barry moved to Poughkeepsie, Richie has been coming down every week. He writes a different Bible verse on a whiteboard and sits there and talks to Barry. And I see, you know, when stuff like that happens, I see my husband. He's talkative, he's happy, he cracks jokes. He's not just, it's like he's back to normal except for the quadriplegia.
Yeah, yeah.
For a while, everybody, you know, people are still very concerned about him. They pray and they let us know where he and we are in their prayers. One of the things I learned is it's very hard to take care of yourself when you're dealing with such a huge life disruption.
So talk about that for a minute. What does that mean?
It went from, you know, me being a wife, a mother, an employee of the church, to me being the sole provider, the sole care, well, not the sole caretaker, but, you know, the main caretaker for my husband, the sole caretaker for my girls, trying to confront these decisions like, how do I make sure we still have a house to stay in? And how do we deal with this huge disruption that, you know, we're never going to go back to the way it was. It's how do we find this new normal?
Yeah.
And it's an ever-changing thing.
Yeah. And I imagine that there's a couple things in there. Like, I imagine there's a season where you're thinking about, hey, we're going to get back to what it was and everything is going to get better. And then you kind of have to yourself get to this place where it's no, this is the way it's going to be. You have to get to this place where it's, this is significant. This is a change.
In a way, I tried to be like that from the beginning. Everybody is very hopeful that he will recover. And I do not allow myself to be hopeful because I have to live with the reality of what it is right now. And if he gets more movement back or more sensation back, which we're hoping, that's great, but emotionally, I can't allow myself to hope because if it doesn't happen, it would be devastating.
Yeah.
And it, I know that sounds harsh, but it got to live for, you know, we have to deal with the reality of where he's at right now, which is he can move his arms to a certain extent. He can't straighten them. He only just recently got some feeling in his hands and in his lower body, which is amazing. And he's come a really long way from where he was 10 months ago. But it's still a lifelong journey.
I don't think it sounds harsh, Monica. It sounds, as somebody who has traveled like this, a very different journey, but like you sound like my wife, who sits there and says, look, I don't have the luxury of sitting there and saying, hey, someday Dan's going to get healed from cancer. I am stuck in this place where how do I help Dan navigate where he is right now? And if someday Dan is miraculously healed, then hey, that's wonderful. And I think that's the journey of a caregiver. And that's hard for people who are outside of that world to understand, because they want to live in that place of continual and constant hope. And sometimes when the caregiver isn't living in that, doesn't speak those words, they struggle to understand. But you're coming from your reality is totally different than theirs, and that's that's not easy. And another piece of this, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is, but I've been a part of, you know, conversations with you where you've had to learn whole new systems. Mm-hmm. And whole new ways of interacting and talking with doctors and whole new systems of, you know, how do we get the benefits that, you know, that Barry is entitled to, and whole things that they've existed for years, but you haven't paid any attention to because you haven't needed them.
Right.
Yeah.
I joked with someone from the county that I wish there was a Medicaid for Dummies book.
Yeah.
Because trying to navigate that is just mind blowing. But as we've been able to take Barry out for longer and longer day trips, you know, I notice, thank heavens for like family or unisex bathrooms, because I or whoever's with him needs to go with him when we like change his catheter or give him his pills. And you can't do that in the women's room or the men's room. So that is just, that's something I never paid attention to before.
Yeah.
Another thing I never paid attention to really was places that are handicap accessible or that aren't. We recently went to a graduation party for our old neighbor, and the place where they had it is an old barn. There was no ramp, you know, there wasn't any easy way to get in. We were very lucky in that Barry's friends lifted him up and brought him inside the barn so he could attend the party. And it's things like that that we'll be looking for, counting on. Very happy that they exist.
Nick, you look like you have a question.
Well, I do. Monica, and I was thinking of this when we first started, and I'm still wondering, this has got to be difficult in many ways for you to talk about, and yet you've probably had conversations like this many times in the last 10 months or so. And I guess what I'm wondering is, Why you agreed to talk to us here today? Why, what you thought would be the benefit to you of being part of this podcast?
First, because it's therapeutic to talk about it. It's now a part of our stories. And every time I think back on it, I glean more information from it that helps me. I also wanted to come on because there is no possible way that we can thank everybody who has reached out to help us. And everybody who has, we owe them a debt of gratitude that is never able to be repaid as much as we would like. Our neighbors have been just phenomenal. Our friends, people in the barber shop who still come in and ask about Barry. It just reminds me that it truly takes a village. And this is what this accident has driven home. We couldn't do this without everybody. We have a group of volunteers who are helping us modify our house so that Barry can come home. Without everybody's support and love and strength, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Yeah.
His brother and sister, they go visit him every day in Poughkeepsie. And, you know, the people who visit him, sometimes they're customers, sometimes they're friends, but every time they go, he draws strength from that. There is one story I'd like to tell about someone in the community. So back when the GoFundMe was open, there was a little boy who was a customer of Barry's. His name is Tyler Krizza. And he brought his piggy bank into the barber shop and emptied it and said that was for Mr. Barry, which is just the sweetest story. Tyler was able to come visit Barry later on last year, and he made him a Christmas stocking, I believe, and just he was so happy to see Barry, and Barry was so happy to see him. I mentioned the GoFundMe. Thanks to everyone's generosity, we've created a special needs trust that is going to take care of Barry. That will provide for things that Medicaid does not cover. It totally benefits him. And I know there are people out there who aren't as fortunate with that kind of support. And I just want to thank everybody who has surrounded us in their strength.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So, you know, if you were going to talk to Monica a year and a half ago, and you were going to say, you know, hey, here's some conversations you need to have before one of life's disruptions comes your way, what are some of the things that you would tell yourself?
Get updated wills, which is something we did after the fact. The last time we had a will done, it was in 2005 when we first married, before we had kids. Think about how you want things to be handled if, God forbid, an accident like this happens.
Yeah.
Be thankful for all the little moments.
Yeah.
One of the things I've realized is a lot of the things that we both used to stress out about before this really don't matter. And I had something happen where something seemed like it could be, you know, really horrible. And I thought to myself, what's the worst that can happen? It already did, and we survived.
Yeah. There's a lot of wisdom in that, Monica. Thank you for that. And I think that there's you know, we like to, as people, we like to move through life pretending that nothing bad is going to happen to us. That happens to other people. Mm-hmm. And nothing bad is going to happen to us and to our family. That's the things that happens to other people. And so we don't need to be prepared for those things. The truth is that life is life, and there's going to come a time when in each of our lives, there's going to be a disruption. It's going to look different for each of us.
Yeah.
But there are steps that we can take to be prepared for those disruptions. And I really like the little bit of wisdom there that, look, see the small things and be thankful and be grateful and be joyful with the small things. So many times we're looking for the big thing, mm-hmm. you know, and we're not going to be thankful. We're not going to be grateful. We're not going to be joyful until we have this big thing happen in our lives. And yet every single day, there are so many small things that happen that if we have the eyes to see it, man, it just, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And if we could see that, it would change the way that we experience each and every day. Yeah.
The little things really make a difference. You have to celebrate all the little victories.
Yeah.
First time Barry was in a chair for like 6 hours straight, we celebrated.
Yeah.
You know, when he was able to move his arms a lot more, we celebrated. You just have to celebrate all the little victories.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Nick, do you have another question?
Well, I do. You said the first person you called after the accident was Pastor Dan.
Mm-hmm.
What did he say to you?
Honestly, I don't remember. That, I was on autopilot.
Sure, that's fair.
I remember you did say a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you what it was, but I just remember feeling comforted when I hung up.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah.
I'm glad of that. And it wasn't a very good question, I guess, but I was just curious to know how that, what part of you that spoke to?
It spoke to the part of me that needed reassurance that no matter what was going to happen, it was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing. That's a hard thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, that's a hard place to be, that when the disruption comes, to be able to find that sense of peace, you know, Jesus uses the language, you know, a peace that passes all understanding. And this idea that, you know, that no matter what comes our way, you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be okay. And it's a peace that passes all understanding. And it can be ours. We can find it. We can experience it. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense sometimes. It seems counterintuitive. It doesn't seem logical at times. Especially when you're walking in the midst of a disruption.
But you know it when you experience it.
You know it when you experience mm-hmm. it. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. You know it when you experience it. Yeah. That's it. That's the truth. So, yeah. Monica, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being willing to just share, you know, to share out of your experience, and to share some of the journey and some of the lessons that you've learned, and to everybody who's listening, you know, there's just there's so much in what Monica's has shared with us. Just a couple things that I'm going to pull out and highlight for you. The first is that look, sometimes the disruptions in our lives, they come and we might not be prepared for them. We're not ready for them. We're not expecting them. But there are certain things that we can do to be ready for the disruption that is, you know, a year down the road, 2 years, 3 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road, you know, and it's a wise thing to be getting things in order so that when the disruption comes, we can navigate it in a little bit of an easier kind of way. I'm going to put a link as part of this podcast to the book Caring Conversations that Nancy and I wrote, because it really is all about getting things in order and getting things in place so that when the disruption comes, you're able to navigate that season well. And then the idea of that Monica talked about of celebrating the small victories, of being able to see those moments that are worth celebrating, that are where the Spirit of God breaks through, where you have a small win, and being able to celebrate those. So many times we focus on this idea that I'm not going to celebrate until the big thing happens, and when we do that, we kind of set ourselves up to continue to struggle, to continue to long for something, to continue to want, and yet there's so much all around us that happens each and every day that's worthy of celebration. And if we can see those small things and we can celebrate those small things, it's amazing how that changes our heart, that changes the way that we see the world. All of a sudden, we find ourselves filled with gratitude. We find ourselves filled with joy. And that changes our relationships. It changes the way that we see the world. So even if you find yourself in the midst of one of life's hardest and biggest disruptions, let me challenge you to look around you and find those things that are worthy of celebration and call them out and celebrate them well. And until next time, may you be abundantly aware of the Spirit of God, alive and well, and at work in your world.